Greetings, friends. This talk introduces the 10th week's Truth of Happiness course Dhamma study on the five hindrances. This talk was recorded in Frenchtown, New Jersey on February 23rd, 2016. So hindrances to practice, they seem almost, after all these great learnings that we've had on impermanence and anatta and dependent origination, and now we're talking about something as mundane as hindrances to practice. But this really gets down to the heart of it. And so you can say, it's true that every one of these hindrances that I'll talk about in a moment are part of dukkha, and they're also part of that second the second noble truth of craving and clinging. And it's these hindrances are to be recognized, but not judge ourselves harshly over it. The Buddha taught hindrances to practice over 2,500 years ago because they're so common that they come up in almost everybody's Dhamma practice. And they're simply to be recognized as something that if we put too much, if we allow them to distract us too much, we'll lose our Dhamma practice by it. But they're very simple and basic. And there's a lot more in this article that you'll read this week that I'm not going to read tonight. The five common hindrances to practice are sensory or sensual desire. And so the Buddha is talking about our experience on our cushion, but also off our cushion as we're trying to remain mindful of the Eightfold Path. But certainly on our cushion, if we have the constant need for sensory stimulation, meditation, especially Shamatha Vipassana meditation, is going to be the most boring thing we could do. Boredom is the need for constant sensory stimulation, and it often comes up. Every one of us has experienced it in meditation. The Buddha's teaching it to not say, well, you're doing something wrong if you're feeling bored, if you need constant sensory stimulation. Recognize it, and recognize it within the broader framework. It's simply part of dukkha, and it's part of the second noble truth. It's part of my need to crave and cling for continuation of an ego personality. It's hard for an ego personality to establish itself when we're sitting quietly and letting go of thoughts, isn't it? So that ego personality comes in strong on this point. And then beyond that, the meditation sitting and beyond an Eightfold Path, a true Dhamma practice, that need for sensory stimulation can start affecting us in other ways, the need for more. We've just experienced the most profound teachings that have ever been given to humankind, this Eightfold Path and how to apply it in our lives. And yet the ego personality wants more. I want to find a different type of teaching. Thinking that, well, I'll just maybe I can enrich it with. And I'm not saying don't ever look at anything else. Don't read nothing. I'm not being that closed-minded. What I'm saying is to understand and hold in mind this precious jewel of the Eightfold Path, and then you can weigh everything. Does it fit into that? You might get into something else. Maintain that refined mindfulness that's developed through the Eightfold Path, and then nothing can be a distraction from awakening. And that's the most important thing. That's what this first hindrance to practice that the Buddha's talking about. The second common hindrance is ill will. And we talk about that a lot. If we're holding ill will towards ourselves or towards others, including the Republicans or the Democrats, it's going to be impossible to develop a quiet, peaceful mind and develop that deep concentration. That's one of the most strong distractions that any of us can have. That's why the Buddha taught metta. And that's why and we'll conclude with that. Metta is such a useful thing to use when we're having a difficulty quieting our minds because of holding harsh judgments against ourselves or others. Use metta and use that to help unravel that. And you'll be able to quiet your mind. Again, every one of these relates back to the Four Noble Truths and developing deep concentration of the Eightfold Path. The next common hindrance is interesting words. I like them. Sloth, torpor, or drought. Torpor is a good one. Or drowsiness. And basically, you can say this amounts to either the need to be constantly distracted, and that can lead to drowsiness, or it could also be that we're just not taking good care of ourselves. Or that we're so resistant to change that we have a physical and a mental reaction to it. Ugh. I don't feel anything. That's a common thing that happens, especially when we're coming up against something that we're holding on, a hardened view that we don't want to let go of. It'll often overcome us that way. We become very lazy with our practice, or we just feel dead inside. when that's just the ego personality trying to avoid change at all costs. And again, the Buddha pointed this out over 2,500 years ago. Just to be recognized, if it overcomes us, it's just to be recognized that that's what's going on. Recognize where it comes from, and if we persevere, every one of these will fall aside. The next one is restlessness or worry. And of course, if we're restless or we're overly concerned about what might happen, where does that come from? That comes from an ego personality that's concerned that it won't be able to continue to establish itself or get what it wants in the future. We become very restless. Again, just to recognize that that's what's happening. If I'm restless and I'm trying to sit and I just can't seem to sit, recognize that as a common hindrance to practice. We all have it. And if it's just impossible to sit in that moment, don't. Do something different. Go get up, have a piece of fruit or do some Tai Chi or yoga or anything. And then come back to your practice. But just recognize that that's just a common hindrance. The last that the Buddha taught, and I think it's really important, is doubt, uncertainty, or skepticism. And that doesn't mean that we shouldn't question the Dhamma, but we should also understand where that comes from. If we've really taken refuge in this and have had an experience of the Eightfold Path and how it works in our lives, and then doubt starts overcoming us, recognize that that's just a distraction or a hindrance to practice. And to sit with it. We don't do anything with it. You can meditate. You can maintain your refined mindfulness of the Eightfold Path, even while there's an aspect of you that's very doubtful. Another aspect of this is other people's doubts or other people's skepticism or the world's skepticism that is put on us. People say, well, that's just a lot of nonsense. You know, that's just silly. But we might buy into that. And again, the Buddha is teaching to recognize that. Just recognize it and don't let it knock you off your cushion. People make all kinds of grand statements about meditation. I think I talked about this a couple weeks ago. Recently, there was a well-known senator, I won't give his name, Southern senator, but it doesn't really matter, could be anyone. And he basically said, he was tying yoga into meditation practice, but he said, yoga and meditation is the work of the devil. And then he said, when a mind is in a blank state, that's where the devil... This is a senator. When the mind is blank, that's the devil's playground. The devil comes right in there. Whenever I hear him, my thought is, well, if your God is so powerful, how does he let the devil get in there in the first place? But that's besides the point. The point I'm using now is that skepticism can force many people to not even look or consider meditation or the Buddha's Dhamma because it's the work of the devil. And I'm using an extreme example. That's an example of that fifth hindrance. Don't let your doubt or other people's skepticism or even your own skepticism that's going to arise knock you out of your practice. Just recognize that it's part of that dukkha, it's part of the first and second and part of craving and clinging, and continue with your Dhamma practice. The last thing that I'll emphasize is that, and maybe I should talk about this next week, but I'll say it now and probably next week, we've been given this incredible and really very simple Dhamma practice, simple in the way that it's applied. It seems very complicated at times because of our own conditioned thinking. But to maintain a Dhamma practice is very simple. And the rewards are a life of lasting peace and happiness. Included in that Eightfold Path is the way to continue practice. That's part of right effort. And as we deepen our concentration and we develop the refined mindfulness that's able to, remember, mindfulness means to hold in mind or to recollect. We develop that refined mindfulness that's able to hold in mind and recollect the Eightfold Path, our practice just deepens. So the practice itself feeds on itself. It develops a deeper and deeper level of concentration and an ever refined type of mindfulness until we're fully awakened human beings. So we'll study the hindrances this week and we'll talk about it next week, and then we'll continue with the rest of the book. So any questions about the hindrances? Okay. So let's meditate. We'll meditate for 20 minutes, and I'll take a short break, and if anything comes up during meditation that you feel you need an answer for tonight, just please let me know and we'll talk a little bit more about it, and then I'll finish with the Karaniya Metta Sutta tonight. So find your relaxed meditative posture. Holding your back straight but not stiff. Your ears aligned with your shoulders and nose aligned with your navel. And gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body. Just get a feel for what that's like. To be mindful of your breath in your body. And while remaining mindful of your breath in your body, notice that thoughts are flowing. We're conscious beings, thoughts should be flowing. The purpose of Shamatha Vipassana meditation is to not be distracted by our own thoughts. So when you find that you're caught up in your thinking again, simply acknowledge that and return your mindfulness to the sensation of breathing. I'll repeat that. When you find that you're caught up in your thinking again, simply acknowledge that and return your mindfulness to the sensation of breathing. Putting aside thoughts as they arise, remaining mindful of our breathing. And we'll meditate for 20 minutes. Congratulations on completing the Truth of Happiness 10-week Dhamma study. You have developed a comprehensive understanding of the Buddha's teachings on developing a life of lasting peace and happiness, and you have built an effective foundation for a lifetime of refined mindfulness. The Buddha's Dhamma is a complete Dhamma. It is an insatiable ego personality that demands continual stimulation and distraction rather than acknowledge and continue to develop the profound teachings presented here. Engage in your Dhamma practice wholeheartedly and with patient forbearance. If you have a local Sangha that is well focused on the Four Noble Truths, become a part of that Sangha. If there is not a well-focused Sangha in your area, consider starting one. If you want to use this course at your Sangha, please let me know, and I will help as I can. Dhamma practice does take time and right effort to develop. The true lineage of the Dhamma began over 2,500 years ago. At the Buddha's very first teaching, he set the wheel of truth in motion. As the Four Noble Truths have entered each mind ready to receive these profound truths, the lineage of the Three Jewels has been maintained. This is a true Dhamma lineage and a true Dhamma transmission. Beginning with the awakened mind of one human being, Shakyamuni Gautama, the Buddha, the lineage of the Dhamma is now part of your mind. Treat it like the precious jewel that it is, and lasting peace and happiness will arise in your mind as well. Please always feel free to contact me, and please consider writing a review of this book and course at Amazon.com. Peace.